So do I go?
Oh, I didn't know that part.
This is worth repeating.
Okay.
This is worth repeating.
Live storytelling from Texas Public Radio.
So when I was in middle school, I was obsessed with the TV show Law and Order, right? And the cops and robbers stuff at the beginning of the show was cool. But my favorite part was the end, when the prosecutors would have to work together to bring the accused to justice, right? And my favorite dramatic parts were when they had some kind of moral dilemma, right? Do we take it easy on the mayor's daughter? Do we tell the court that the cops didn't have a warrant? You know, do we seek the death penalty in this case, right? Big, dramatic moments. And invariably, the solution to this problem always had two steps. The first step was to sit in a big leather chair with a law book and talk about the law. And the second step was to get a big bottle of scotch and drink it. And I loved it, right? I was fascinated. And so fast forward 10 years, and I was in law school, which you might call destiny, but I would call graduating with an English degree in the middle of a recession. But fortunately, I loved it. Law school totally confirmed my views of the courtroom as a holy sort of temple place, right, where judges in black robes and powdered wigs sat and handed out opinions and did all the stuff that we like to call the criminal justice system. And so my last semester in law school, I decided that I wanted to worship at the temple myself, so I got an internship at the district attorney's office. And in retrospect, I should have known that my bubble was about to get burst the first day I showed up, when I went to the courtroom and reached and noticed a little sign right next to the door saying that people shouldn't come in unless they were, quote, wearing a shirt or had their pants pulled up. For a brief minute, I tried to imagine a judge in a powdered wig and no pants, and it didn't make sense, but I kind of dismissed it as a fluke. Now, my job was to work in the minor misdemeanor court, and the way that worked is twice a day, a small horde of public drunks and petty thieves would come in, and I would pull their citations, and I would ask them if they were pleading guilty or not guilty. And if they pled guilty, they would go see the judge, they would pay their fine. If they pled not guilty, they would come back later for a trial. But that was literally all I did, was ask people, right, for days, right? Good morning, ma'am, how are you? Guilty or not guilty, right? Like a super judgy Walmart greeter, right? And it was sometimes humorous, right? There was no shortage of people who came up pleading not guilty to drug offenses while wearing like glow-in-the-dark cannabis shirts. There was the lady who called the police to report a hit and run because she was so drunk she didn't realize that she had biked into a telephone pole. That was good. But overall, it was sort of disconcerting. And so one night I went home to my wife and I said, you know, look, I knew it wasn't the Supreme Court, right? But I thought I would be, I don't know, sitting around, drinking scotch, talking about the law, I don't know. Like Law and Order, right? But my wife didn't know because she didn't watch Law and Order, so she had no idea what I was talking about. But she's very lovely and nice, and so she patted my arm, gave me her best attaboy, and I went back to work. A couple of weeks later, though, a guy came up to me, and he had been cited for failing to update the address on his driver's license, which is kind of unusual because that's the sort of thing that if you just do it, you don't have to come to court, right? Not a big deal. But for some reason, he hadn't done it yet, so I asked him, hey, buddy, what's going on? And he told me the story that I wasn't expecting was that he had lived with his sick father at his father's house for about 10 years, and his father had passed away, and he had inherited the house, and he was trying to fix it up. And in the middle of that project, something had happened, right? Like a pipe had burst, or I don't even recall what now, but for whatever reason, he couldn't live there anymore. And so he had moved in with his sister until he scraped up the money, and 1 week turned into two, and then a month, and then 6 months, and then finally he got cited for having an out-of-date license. And as he talked, he actually started crying, right? And it sort of hit me, right, that he was probably never going to have the money and that it was sort of emotionally painful for him to admit that. And I thought to myself, wow, you've been a real a-hole by sort of dismissing what you're doing as petty and trivial when to the people in the courtroom it's clearly not, right? And kind of had a check my privilege moment. And I resolved sort of right then and there to let my law practice sort of be infused with that compassion, right? That understanding for the people in the courtroom. And I found very quickly that resolve was tested, sort of by the last week of my internship. I had been sort of promoted, more or less, to preparing witnesses for trial. And so I was preparing a police officer who was going to testify in a case where the defendant had been charged with soliciting prostitution, right? Which sounds like interesting, right? So anyway, the officer had set up a prostitution sting, right? Which sounds really fancy, but men are animals. So literally all she did was stand in front of a roach motel for about 3 hours and wait for guys to show up. And not only that, it was cold, and she was wearing a microphone, and so she was dressed in like a members-only jacket and some track pants, and yet they made like 36 arrests over a 3-hour period. And as they were about to wrap up the program, our defendant rolled up in a pickup truck, kind of rolled down the window, leered at her, and sort of grunted, right? How much for a blow, right? Gross. Now, what you need to know about prostitution charges, just a life tip, is that they involve a requested act and an offered price, right? And for technical legal reasons, the police officers couldn't suggest those themselves. They had to wait for the John to come up with the act and the price. So we have an act, and so our officer did what she was trained to do, which was kind of play coy, right? Like, oh, you know, you're asking me to do a favor? Like, what are you asking about? And right, and the guy finally gets the hint, sort of reaches down, pulls out his wallet, Velcro, by the way, rips it open, and his face kind of falls, right? Oh man, he says, I don't have any money. I just spent it on. And then his eyes drop to his seat, his face lights up, he reaches down, pulls up Popeye's bucket, and says, hey, do you take fried chicken? Yeah. And at that point, everybody loses it, right? The officer, the guys in the surveillance van across the street, right? Like, everybody just loses it. And they arrest him, and they cite him, and he shows up in court on my beat, right? And I'm thinking, this sounds like an open and shut case, but you know what? It wasn't. Because the law at the time was unclear as to whether fried chicken counted as payment for prostitution purposes. And so I spent the better part of an afternoon with my boss in his office, going over law books, reading the statutes, looking at the history, and trying to make a case that, yeah, fried chicken totally counts, right? And we did, and we won the case. Yeah, yeah. And at the end of the day, I went across the street to my favorite bar, ordered a beer, and I was just laughing at the absurdity of it all. And it occurred to me, that was my Law and Order moment, right? I finally got it. Except, of course, one thing was missing. So I reached across the bar and I tapped the bartender and I said, hey, buddy, forget the beer. I'll take a scotch. Thank you. That's my story.